Support comes from the Racine Theater Guild, presenting the Boxcar Children through Sunday, April 15th. Orphaned and in danger of going to different foster homes, four siblings make an abandoned railroad boxcar their home and discover the rewards and perils of life on the run. Tickets are available online. This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW-Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. I'm your host today, Steve Brown, and my guest in segment one of today's program will be Dr. Scott Pierce, who is the district administrator for the Wistosha Central High School District. Also, Lisa Albrecht, who is the principal of the high school, and Gail Netzger Jensen, who is director of curriculum. And then in segment two, I'll be speaking with Matthew Cheek. He is a kindergarten teacher in the Johnson Creek School District here in Wisconsin, and we will be talking about how he uses a new computer program that works with kindergarten students. It's called Osmo. And we'll get a chance to learn about how this program can be used in the classroom in a creative way, but more importantly, how it enhances education. My guests this morning in segment one are Dr. Scott Pierce, who's the district administrator in the Wistosha Central High School District. Also, Lisa Albrecht, who's the principal here at Wistosha Central High School. And also, Gail Netzger Jensen, who's director of curriculum. First of all, let me ask a question of you, Dr. Pierce. Here we are in April. The school year is winding down. From your perspective as a district administrator, how have things been going this year?
It's been an excellent year. And of course, we talk about curriculum and instruction first. We've had some great successes with our students in many academic areas, and we're always pleased to see how they do just by our report card and testing results that we've received back. Also in the area of co-curriculars, our students have been very successful. This is the first year we had an opportunity to actually have our basketball team go to the state tournament, and that was very exciting. So I think it's been an excellent year. I would say as you look over a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably about an 8 or 9 in many regards. So it's been a good year.
Well, being an educator myself and also, as you know, a school board member in a neighboring district here, an 8 or 9 in any year is an excellent year, isn't it?
I would agree. Absolutely.
As you look at the overall issues of, let's say, finance, that's always an issue that that school administrators are concerned with, and certainly our state legislature and the governor with the budget and everything. Give us a quick overview, maybe at the 10,000-foot level, if you will, about how things stand as far as the budget and long-term and with respect to how things are here in the district.
That's probably our biggest struggle is our budget. We've been working with the district, with the board for the last few weeks. We're going to have to make some tough decisions coming up for this year and in the future based on the funding formula that has been used that, as you know, is archaic. Things that really need to change for public education for all of us. You're seeing more and more school districts that are having to go to operational referendums to ask their local public support for additional finance because they can't get it through the state and federal government. And we're really at that point in another year or so. We are having to make spending down our reserve, which we've been very pleased to be able to continue to maintain for our district. But the only way to have a balanced budget is you're going to have to start dipping into that reserve. And at some point, that's a no-win situation for school districts. And that's really where we are. We're going to have to make looking at reduction of some of our teachers, larger class sizes, ultimately elimination of some of our programs. And this is so counter to why we're here, what we're trying to do for our students. So it's not a good time fiscally for our school district and for the state for education.
As you talk about that in terms of potential of reducing the number of teachers increasing class sizes. We all know that research very clearly says that larger class sizes most of the time results in lower achievement scores, and certainly here in this high school, achievement scores and test scores are very good, as they are in our nearby high school at Wilmot High School. When you have to make those sorts of decisions, at what point do you as district administrator and the board start looking at the possibility of another referendum?
We've already started having that conversation. We actually had Baird, that we work with, the financial planner for the school district. They gave us what's called a forecast model. It's a five-year forecast model that we've been looking at. And we had a representative from Baird at a budget workshop that we provided for the board and the community back in February. And she showed us that if we don't do something different if we do everything status quo and not make any changes, in another 2 years, we would basically be out of any reserve. And we have to go to short-term borrowing just to be able to make our payroll. So we recognize that we're going to have to go to the public eventually to ask for support, just like Wheatland did. They had a very successful referendum, as you know, operational as well as building. Salem Grade School had a successful operational referendum last year, I believe. And we're very much going to be in the same situation in another year if something doesn't change. And to be honest, I don't see the change coming from the state. It's going to have to come from our local taxpayers if we're going to be able to continue to support the programs that we've been able to maintain for years.
For our listening audience, we are here in the offices of actually Lisa Albrecht, the principal here at Wistosia Central High School, and I'm holding the microphone, so if you hear some scratchy noises, I'll try to edit as many of those out as possible. And Lisa, first of all, welcome once again to Education Matters.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and speaking with you.
Based on what Scott was just talking about, as a principal, you're out and about the building all the time. I know that. When it comes to the hard decisions of deciding where cuts have to be made, and again, I'm talking in general terms, when you have to cut the budget, when you have to cut staff, have to cut programs, give us just a sense from your perspective as a principal, as a seasoned, experienced principal, and school administrator, what you go through psychologically, mentally, and just the impact that it has on you as principal and the impact that it has on the school community.
Well, I'm going to echo what Dr. Pierce had to say, in that it's really disheartening because it is counterintuitive to what we believe in here in education. We believe in providing so much opportunity for our students. We hear that as a K-12 system, we're to prepare our students for their post-secondary, whatever they decide to go into, create opportunities for students, opportunities that not only exist here in our school district, but post-secondary connections. All those things are what we've worked so hard at. We've worked very hard at leveraging our resources to make sure our students are successful. And as you alluded to, we've had great success. Our students are working hard. We have one of the highest graduation rates. And so when I have to make these decisions, it's just disheartening, period, because I know that it's not in the best interests of the education of our students. I know I have to take away opportunities that I wouldn't have to if I didn't have these fiscal impacts. So I have that business side of me that says I have to do this. And then I have that personal side of me thinking, oh, how is this impacting the person, the individual? Not only the students, but the teachers, their livelihood. I hate it. And this is the part of the job that I don't like. I don't like making those decisions. I always say none of these decisions are a good decision. They are. I have to look at what decisions, what's the lesser of two evils, and what decisions will minimize the impact on our students. Being cognizant about the teachers that are being affected. I am fortunate that we have three vacant positions this year. As the result of attrition. So in our social studies department, we have a teacher retiring, regular year retiring. We're not filling that, so at least I don't have to lay someone off. We had a teacher that left and became an administrator at a neighboring district. I'm not filling that position. And then another English. So that's three positions that I've eliminated without impacting a person in terms of a staff member. But that's each teacher is responsible for teaching 10 sections. That's 30 sections times, you know, 25 seats in a section, that's quite a few seats that students aren't going to be sitting in, and they're going to be put into other classes. Unfortunately, there are two teachers right now that will be eliminated as of this point, their position. And it's not because that they aren't strong. They're excellent candidates. They've done things phenomenal. They've put things together, and it's just, like I said, disheartening. So it's very, it really tugs at me because I have that feeling for individual, but I also know that it's not in the best interest of our students in the school.
Let's talk about something a little more on the positive side as far as this current school year. Maybe share with our listening audience some of the real highlights so far. Obviously, this is April, so there's still a few more months left in the school year. But what are some of the really great things this school year that, that you could point to that our audience would be interested in knowing?
You know, I'm really proud at what the school has done and all the individual groups at building our community of students. So it's a very inclusive atmosphere, from doing things in our advisory to talk about inclusion and anti-bullying and collective things, to most recently the Dude Be Nice Week, which was just put on by our student council about, you know, be careful of your words and that. So there has been a significant effort to build the culture and the climate of our students in here and be respectful of each other, understanding the differences and diversity amongst people, but also being respectful and understanding there is different viewpoints, let's put it that way, without having argument and things like that. And we've really built that. And then you talk about all the different things that come with it that has built that. The trip to the state tournament basketball team, very much a school collaboration process. But then also the activities happening in our organizations, our DECA, FBLA, our HOSA, Health Occupations Program, kids working together to get things done. Our global languages class that works together. We have a student that had some hardships in their family. They're coming together to help that student. Earlier this year, we had a student that has special medical needs. We had an assembly where the whole school banded behind the student to collect pop tabs, sell crazy socks, they were called, to support the student in the Ronald McDonald House. So there's been a lot of things that outside of what you learn in terms of academics that we are really proud of, that is beyond the test score in your courses. It's about being great character in a great building. So those are some of the things I can highlight.
Let's shift and talk with Gail Netzker and talk about curriculum and also about assessment and testing. As you look at this school year and maybe also reflect on last year as far as the test scores, the state testing, give us some of the highlights of how students are doing here in this high school as far as statewide testing. And then also, from your perspective, the impact that has on overall learning.
Well, I'm happy to say that our students perform well on standardized tests. Our ACT scores are above the state average. Our students did very well on the work keys, the vast majority, 90-some percent, earning workforce certification. Students do well on the SPIRE. They score above the state average, and on the forward exam. And then we have our AP testing, which is not statewide testing, but that's the testing that I'm probably most proud of. We have a very large population of students that take AP courses, and we're not, we don't have an elite program. In other words, we try to get as many students as possible taking AP courses because we believe that even if they don't take the AP exam, the AP experience is good for them and the learning is greater. So with that, we still have a good pass rate on our AP exams, and we're preparing for those again this year. So we'll have over 400 kids testing. So as far as our performance on state exams and AP exams, I feel good about that. We're working to improve. We're always looking to improve. As far as the impact, I feel like it's excessive. We're pulling kids out of class a lot. to do testing. We try to schedule our testing. We work very hard to schedule it so that it has the least amount of impact on student class time and instructional time. But students are still missing out on quite a bit of instruction in order to do the testing. And it comes at a time of year when they're also preparing for, while they're taking state exams, they're preparing for AP exams and missing out on that opportunity. They're preparing for final exams in their classroom, trying to work and finish up their coursework. So I think it's a little excessive. I'd like to see a reduction in the amount of testing.
You know, and that certainly is an area, a topic of concern that a lot of parents, students have as well, and also educators and researchers about the amount of time that is taken with all the testing that students are subjected to, the required testing. If you could wave a magic wand and do something to really change the whole structure of testing, and also recognizing that it's important that we know where students are academically, because the community wants to know, of course, and, the parents, the community. What are some things that you believe, based on your years of experience in the area of curriculum, could possibly be done to improve that area?
That's a tough question. I'd like to see us get the test results in a more timely fashion. Because part of it is, obviously, we test kids in order to see how they're performing. And from a school perspective, it's valuable for us if we can glean data from that testing that can inform future instruction. Unfortunately, a lot of those test results come to us very late. For example, forward exam results. We gave the forward exam the end of March, right before spring break. We won't get those results until the start of next school year. That's late in the game. ACT results, those tests, I think, have more value for students and parents. So students have already received their results from the statewide ACT. We have received individual results. We won't receive our whole school results, though, our district results, in a format where we can really analyze that data until August, end of July, August. So I'd like to see us get the data back in a more timely fashion so that it can be more useful. As far as the testing structure, one of the concerns I have is it's all kind of, the testing windows are all piled up at the end of the school year. So we have ACT and work keys for our juniors. We have forward exam for our 10th graders. We have Aspire exam for our 9th and our 10th graders, which is a very long exam. It takes almost 5 hours to administer that test. It's longer than the ACT. So I think that test could perhaps be reduced in time. We also have to do the DLM for our students with significant disabilities. And then we go right into AP testing. So we are really testing the entire month of April and into the third week of May. So I'd like to see that somehow distributed differently and maybe a reduction in the amount of time of the forward exam.
One other question I wanted to ask you about your curriculum, and in particular the elementary districts that feed into Central High School, Wasocia Central High School. With those districts that feed into those 4K through 8 districts that feed into the high school here. I know that you work very closely with all of those districts in your role as director of curriculum here. How has that worked over the last, say, 3 years? Because there are still people who talk every so often about consolidation, about, perhaps consolidating the two high schools, Wilmot and Wasocia Central, and the elementary districts. And as a school board member of one of those elementary districts, I have my perspective, but I know everyone likes to have their own district. From your perspective as an administrator who's working with all those districts, what's your viewpoint on how that's working so far?
In all honesty, we work with the grade schools, but we don't work as closely as we would like to because we have different curriculum directors. We do have our curriculum discussions throughout the year at various points. I worked in a consolidated district before. I think a disadvantage to the setup, the way it is here with every school being their own district, is that we have kids coming in at different levels and with different backgrounds. And so do we feel that difference? Absolutely. So we meet the kids where they're at, and we try to work with grade schools, and I think the communication we have with them is good, but I don't think we have the time that we need to in order to – we don't have a tightly aligned curriculum vertically and horizontally, and I do think that's to the detriment of kids. So I would love to see that be different. Myself, I realize people like their individual districts, and I understand that there are a lot of benefits to being individual districts like that. But for kids, and in terms of academics, I think it would be advantageous to be consolidated, where we have a very tightly aligned curriculum. I think it would be advantageous academically.
I'll pose that same question to you, Dr. Pierce. In your role as district administrator, and you were the previous superintendent in Kenosha Unified, I know from time to time there is discussion about the potential of consolidation. The state of Iowa forced, the state legislature moved to require all of those very, very small school districts in Iowa to consolidate when you had a graduating class of 14 in some of those high schools. So, from your perspective and from discussions and just the overall possibility in the future, is that something that that would either come down as an edict, do you think, from the state, or is that something that all of the superintendents or district administrators in this area would actually entertain some serious discussion?
It's interesting. When I first started this position 10 years ago, one of the board members, who shall remain nameless, said, "The one word that will not pass your lips is the word consolidation." I said, that's easy, not a problem. But I also recognize, certainly as Gail has alluded to, the benefits of having a consolidated district. When I first started teaching, I actually taught at Waterford High School, which is a union high school district also. As a teacher, I saw the advantages of being in a union high school because when I needed something, I'd go right to the superintendent and say, this is something I need. And if he identified it was that they had the funds in the budget, he could say, well, yes, we'll provide that because he only had a small package looking at the high school to concern himself with. As a union school, as a unified district, obviously, you've got to keep in mind all of the entities, all of the schools that are going to be impacted by any kind of decision that you're going to make. So certainly from the curriculum standpoint, I think the articulation from the grade schools to the high schools is much better if you're in a consolidated district. When I was in Waterford years ago, there actually was a push by the state to try to consolidate school districts. In fact, they had made threats that they were going to withhold state aid if the school districts would not consolidate. There was a big lobbying group, so many people from where I was before, that really pushed us against that, and that's why it hasn't happened. We do remember that the Trevor-Wilmot School District a few years ago, they did consolidate. The state provided incentives for them initially to do that consolidation. They gave them additional funding. So there's some incentives the state has put out there for districts to try to get them to consolidate. I guess really where it's going to come from, it's going to have to come from the state saying, it's an edict almost, you either need to consolidate or, because I think just as we've talked, each local municipality, the little school districts out here, they have their identity. They don't want to lose that identity. And if it's going to come down to possibly losing federal or state aid in order to force that issue, that's probably what it'll take. Mm-hmm.
One last question for you, Lisa. When I walked into your office, I also met Hannah, who's your little Sheltie. Why is Hannah here at the school? And describe Hannah.
Well, Hannah is a blue merle Sheltie. She's my personal pet. And about 7 years ago, I certified Hannah to be a therapy dog. And I would bring her about once every couple of weeks just to interact with the kids, and they would want to meet with her and play with her. And then what started to happen is that they kept saying, Miss Albrecht, the best thing you do is bring Hannah to school. Well, I hope I can do other things, but at least they recognized it. And we've had students who've had significant anxieties, and part of their plan for education has been the incorporation of Hannah. So now Hannah comes to school Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with me, and she works with students in all aspects of the school. It could be a student in the special education department earning rewards, or it could be some students with some severe anxieties. So Hannah likes to be part of the group, and she is embraced by all the kids, and she's just been a wonderful addition that has brought that sense of community and fun to be at school. That when I talked about that earlier, that's just one other little piece that makes us unique here and having that opportunity. And I was happy to share that with her. In fact, one of our students went on to Gateway. Their parents is at Gateway. They knew of Hannah. They invited Hannah to come to the nursing program just recently, and I got feedback from that. And Hannah helped two students who normally got such significant test anxiety that they always did poorly. After Hannah visited with them, we were told that these two young ladies scored their highest that they've ever scored, that that has just really significantly reduced their anxiety. And it's those things that why Hannah's here at Central, but she goes out. So that's who Hannah is.
And my last question for you, Scott, your role here as district administrator over the last 10 years, and I'll pick up on what Lisa was just saying, a sense of community. As you look at this high school, what is one thing that as you look at your role as a district administrator, if there was a, I think I asked you this question once before, if you met a parents who were thinking about having their son or daughter attend this high school, what's the one thing that you would make sure that they would leave your office with, that they would remember about this school district and why they should enroll their child, their son or daughter, into Associa Central?
As a district administrator, it's always been my responsibility to find the best leadership you can for a school or in a school district. And I've always been very proud, with a few exceptions, of the leaders I've been able to identify and to bring into our schools. We've had outstanding leadership and actually great consistency of leadership in this high school in the last 8 years. And then Gail, of course, has been here even beyond that. And so in any school or any district, the most important component for good progress of your school is the leadership that you have in place. And I would always encourage, as I've talked to other administrators, I work with future administrators, and I know what good administrators are. If you have strong leadership in schools, you're going to have a good school. And you have to then, my responsibility is to make sure to support those leaders so that they can be successful. And that's why we have had great success here, certainly in the time that I've been here, but even before that, because we've had good leaders. So if I was going to tell a parent about the importance of coming to Central, I would emphasize that we have outstanding leadership in the school, and we have outstanding teachers that work with our principals, and that's what makes a good school.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Scott Pierce, Lisa Albrecht, principal, and Gail Nesker Jensen, director of curriculum, for being my guest in segment one here on Education Matters on WGTD HD. And before we go on to segment two of Education Matters, I did want to mention that Dr. Scott Pierce will be retiring from the Wastosha Central High School as district administrator at the end of this calendar year in December of 2018. And we continue now with this second segment of Education Matters here on WGTD Public Radio. And I'm very pleased to welcome via telephone Matthew Cheek, and he has been teaching for the last 6 years at the kindergarten level in the Johnson Creek School District. Matthew, welcome to Education Matters.
Thank you.
First of all, you are a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and what was your major?
Sure, yeah. My degree or major was early childhood, middle childhood, so my degree kind of covers pre-K through 6. I did an art minor, or art studio minor, with a ceramics emphasis, just very into the arts.
Give us a sense of the Johnson Creek School District.
Yeah, we have a lot of, it's a small rural community, so that they do a really good job of keeping class sizes very small. So my homeroom is 12 kids. It used to be 13, but I had one kid move to another state.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep single classrooms to around, you know, 15 kids or so is what they try to do. And then they have, so we have my classroom, another K-1 split class that has some kindergarten, some first grade, and then another team-taught kindergarten room that has probably like 26, 27 kids.
Okay.
But they try to, again, try to keep, you know, that teacher-student ratio really low.
We're talking specifically about how you got involved in using this really exciting new product, and it's called Osmo, and this is what is called an accelerated learning system that uses an iPad, physical objects, and educational tools to keep kids engaged in learning and build their confidence through hands-on play. And, of course, I'm reading this from a promotional piece of material about this particular product. But give us a sense of how you got involved in selecting this product and how you integrate that into your own curriculum.
Yeah, so I had seen a commercial on TV when my daughters were watching TV. So saw it, and it was for this monster character where he is asking you to draw pictures of stuff either on paper or a whiteboard, and then he takes those images and brings them into his on-screen world. And I first saw it and was like, well, that's really neat. So I thought, you know, I kind of want to try and get that for my daughters, get a chance to check it out and see if it was something that could be brought into the educational setting, because there were not just this game, but there were other educational games that had interested me as well. So I first purchased it for my own kids, and then we tried it. They loved it and instantly was able to see, you know, the educational value in it and brought it into my own classroom. And at that time, wasn't really sure how I was going to use it. I decided to use it as kind of like a whole group kind of warm-up thing,
mm-hmm.
numbers app. And students are basically able to come up and use these number tiles, and the iPad's able to see what number tiles they throw in front of the iPad, and they're able to create connections between these numbers to build larger numbers. And I had used it what I thought was going to be like a, you know, 15-minute warm-up, you know, give everybody a chance to come up and interact with it a little bit and then move on. They ended up, you know, taking up almost the entire, you know, 90-minute block.
Mm-hmm.
They were just so excited. They all sat on the carpet, waited patiently for their turn. They wanted to do it, and they were, you know, not wanting me to stop and move on to another thing. So it was then kind of like, oh, this could be something. So then the next day, we ended up doing something different, and we have kind of a workshop model in my math classroom, and the student was working on a whiteboard on their own and had come up to me with an extended addition equation. So I think it was like 2 plus 3 plus 1 plus, you know, 2,
mm-hmm.
like that, where they were adding more than one number together. And we had never really done anything like that. We had only talked about adding two numbers. And here this student had, you know, after playing Osmo once for 40 minutes, had, you know, discovered that, oh, I can add more than just one number. And she was doing these extended equations correctly, you know, drawing pictures to represent those equations and using all the correct symbols and stuff like that, and which is interesting because the symbols aren't really represented, you know, heavily in the game. It's just kind of the connections between the numbers. So that's when I kind of took it to my director of curriculum and instruction, and we ended up getting a bunch more. So it wasn't just the one that I had for my students. I was able to take that
mm-hmm.
one back home.
Yeah, and isn't that the exciting part of being a teacher? And I'm a teacher myself, and where you know, this whole idea of learning and you know, I mean, oh my gosh, making learning fun. I mean, that just blows the mind of just almost anyone.
It was a total like aha moment, like
yeah.
Wow, like this this is something really special.
So sure.
We definitely rolled it out and got a bunch more, and we use it, you know, today. We use it in almost every day of our math class. Mm. We have a whole center where students in the math class are working on iPads, and they're either doing another personalized activity or they're playing Osmo Numbers, where they're getting to interact with those numbers and find and learn the connections through, you know, play, which is so cool, because one of the really cool features of this game is it doesn't penalize you for how long it takes you to complete a level. There's no timer on the screen. There's no, you know, you got to beat this level in a certain amount of time. There's no penalty for, you know, not building the correct connection between those numbers. So if you're trying to build number five and you throw up, you know, the wrong amount of numbers and get the number six, you're not penalized in any way. It kind of gives you that time and that freedom to kind of explore those relationships between the numbers and get to that number any way that you can.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and in looking at the teacher's guide for Osmo, I noticed that their STEM learning with Newton. Have you used that in class?
Yeah, we use a lot of the creative apps like Newton, Masterpiece, and Monster during our morning time and kind of during our less structured kind of choice centers time. So we use those creative apps there, and it's always the first center to fill up. They go right to it. They get so excited for it, and that's definitely one of the ones that they like to do the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's where they get to kind of create try and funnel these little drips to a specific location on the screen through drawing lines and all kinds of stuff. So
in the teacher's guide here, I'm reading that it says that Newton challenges students as they progress with bouncing balls, accelerating platforms, and fans that will encourage collaboration and creative problem solving. Do you actually see all this happening? And as you're watching this, what's your reaction, you know, as an experienced teacher, you know, who's been in the classroom for 6 or 7 years, you know, and this is your area of specialization? How do you react to all this as a teacher?
I love it. It's just that creative thinking, like problem solving, the stuff that's really hard to teach is something that they're getting a chance to experience through these games. And it's kind of nice that they get them to a point where they're comfortable using a skill, and then they'll throw in a fan or the acceleration thing, and then they have to think about that, what they know, and how to solve a puzzle completely different. Now, how do I get these little drips or these bouncing balls to this location, you know, either avoiding those spaces or can I use those to my advantage?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, that's something that's really hard to teach.
Sure. And then I also noticed that there's a masterpiece for art education, and you mentioned that your minor was in art. So I would suspect, and we haven't talked about this ahead of time, I would suspect that you also use that, because it's a really neat way of involving art and the whole area of drawing and the whole sense of motor skills.
Yeah, that app really extends the students' own artistic ability, so they're able to draw things. Excuse me. They're able to draw things that are, you know, well outside of their own original, you know, skill level, which is really neat, because they're able to, project that picture on the iPad, and then they follow their hand on the iPad, and it ends up drawing the picture on their page for them, which is, takes a little getting used to, you know, like watching the iPad instead of watching where your hand is actually going. But once you do get the hang of it, that you know, like you said, that fine motor skill is key there. Once they do get a hang of it, they're drawing amazing pictures. I have kids that come up to me and hand me, you know, all kinds of pictures almost every day that just blow my mind away, that are like stuff that are better than I can draw. I've seen people do with like research papers where they're researching a president or something, and they draw, you know, find a picture. You can pull a picture offline. You can, you know, take a picture with your camera and just draw it right there. So that's one of the apps that again, that we use a lot in that choice time, as those creative apps are key for building problem solving and creative expression.
So. Sure. And for any of our listening audience who you know, have younger kids, you know, younger children, and if they have an iPad, or if they're thinking about maybe, you know, getting an iPad for their, you know, own son or daughter, I know that, you know, that they can just go to playosmo.com and they register, and then they get access. There's a very small fee. I believe it's available for like $49. It seems like, to me at least, that what you're doing is that you are integrating all this, and you're bringing it into the classroom. You're integrating it directly into your curriculum. But it's not just, let's have a breakout session and do this, but you're integrating this into all aspects of your day-to-day curriculum, aren't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, and we have actually extended, you know, I've brought in pieces of our curriculum to, you know, to use more of this. We've just recently started adding kind of computer science to our kindergarten science curriculum. As, you know, this has come out, they've released computer science coding apps, and that kind of caught my attention. It's a ton of fun to play, so I was like, I started learning more about computer science and the, you know, the need for computer science in early education, and how big of a skill and important that is in, you know, our future as learners.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually started creating a computer science curriculum where students as low as kindergarten are learning computer science, and they're doing that through Osmo games and other resources that we found.
Sure. And I know there are a number of YouTube videos that are online that a parent can take a look at if they want more, you know, if they want to see how it actually works. My last question for you, Matthew, as you've been using Osmo, give us a sense of how it's impacted your overall teaching, your methodology, and also the impact overall that you see it having on your students.
It has a great impact, especially, like I said, a lot of the games are ones where they're not penalized for, you know, taking too long, or, you know, they're given time to think as much as they need and kind of explore things at their own pace, which is such an important thing for these young learners. And a lot of the games, some of them may not be as educational, but there are definitely more, you know, benefits to games and stuff like that than just education. The creative ones help students build social and emotional connections with each other, and I've noticed that with, you know, several of my students. One of my students was a Spanish-speaking student, completely Spanish. So she knew no English at the beginning of the year, and one of the big kind of breakthroughs for her was when they came out with an update for Monster, that Monster, or Mo, the character, spoke in Spanish. So she was able to, you know, play this game, and this monster was able to connect with her and ask her stuff in a language that she was able to understand. And she was able to do this with peers and everything next to her, and was able to share in their excitement and fun.
Sure.
For kind of the first time. This was like in November, so pretty early on in the year.
Yeah. And
she was still kind of pretty guarded, you know, socially, wasn't really letting a lot of people in, showing a lot of emotion and stuff like that. But, well, like I said, one of the first breakthroughs was, you know, this Monster app where she, you know, you see her smile for one of the first times in school, and she's really starting to enjoy it and coming out of her shell and interacting with peers and teachers more.
I want to thank you for taking your time. And by the way, for our listening audience, Matthew is in between classes, and that's why we heard the announcement over the PA system. But you know what? This shows that you're at school and you're in between classes and everything. Anyway, Matthew Cheek, thank you so much for taking your time, and have a great rest of the day. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
So that wraps up this edition of Education Matters this morning on WGTD HD. My guests today in segment one were Dr. Scott Pierce, who is the district administrator in the Wastosha Central High School District. Also joining Dr. Pierce was Lisa Albrecht, the high school principal, and Gail Netzker Jensen, the director of curriculum. In segment two, Matthew Cheek, who teaches kindergarten in the Johnson Creek Elementary District. For Education Matters, here on WGTD HD, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at